Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Well, thanks for joining us on this, the RTC Weekly Download. I'm Jim Dolan. We feature some interesting old-time radio shows and some regular ones, too, that you all know and love. Lately, we've been delving into the old piles of recording tape. Now, these are open reel tapes. Those of you who are familiar with reel to reel, these are open reel tapes, 7 inches, and they have about 12 shows per tape. So some of these programs that we're getting now have not been heard recently or at all. So it's that time of year. We're going to go out and roll out some of this stuff for you. We're going to start here with, let's see now, what can we do? We'll do Man Without a Country. Now, I know I've heard this before. This is the Brownstone Theater. It's a good show. And we're going to follow that with something maybe you haven't heard. This is Candid Microphone with Bela Lugosi. That's coming up in the second part of the program. But right now, Man Without a Country.
Once again, the years roll back, and you are in the Brownstone Theater to attend the performance of The Man Without a Country. It's a theater of memories, this Brownstone Theater. Your own memories, perhaps. For here we present plays you may have enjoyed once upon a time. Plays that have entertained and thrilled many an audience in many a theater. Plays you will still enjoy. You are in your seat at the Brownstone Theater now, and sitting beside you is the distinguished American drama critic and author, a knowing and charming gentleman, Clayton Hamilton.
Good evening. It's a great pleasure to welcome you in the Brownstone Theater, the theater of my memories and your imagination. Our play this evening, however, is a story of everyone's memories. It is one of the most famous of all American stories, The Man Without a Country, by Edward Everett Hale. It first appeared in 1853, and it has long been regarded as a classic. Our dramatization tonight is by a young man in our armed services, Specialist First Class Hal Davis, USNR. And our Brownstone Theater stars, Gertrude Warner and Jackson Beck, welcome as a guest star the distinguished actor of stage and screen, Neil Hamilton, who will play Philip Nolan, the man who lost his country. Mr. Beck will play Lieutenant Mitchell, and Miss Warner will portray the fascinating Miss Rutledge. Our story begins in the year 1807. A young lieutenant, Philip Nolan, has been tried on charges rising out of his participation in a plot against the government of the United States, a plot instigated by Aaron Burr. The evidence against Nolan has been conclusive, and as our curtain rises, the presiding officer of the trial, Colonel Morgan, has summoned the prisoner to face the court.
There will be order. Lieutenant Nolan, the court has found a verdict of guilty against you. We have considered your case thoroughly. It has been proved that you were willing to be false to the service. It has been proved that you were ready to follow the commands of Aaron Burr, whatever they may have been, wherever they may have led. And yet, before sentence is passed, you may wish to say something.
I have nothing to say.
You do not wish to say anything to show that you have been faithful to the United States?
I have said all that I have to say.
And you wish to say nothing to show that you did not intend to betray the United States?
Damn the United States! I wish that I may never hear of the United States again!
The court will recess. Mr. Marshal, you will have the prisoner rise and face the court. Prisoner, are you ready to hear the sentence of this court?
Yes, I'm ready.
Lieutenant Nolan, this court decides, subject to the approval of the President, that you never hear the name of the United States again so long as you shall live.
Sheriff Mitchell. May I present Philip Nolan, your passenger.
Welcome aboard, Nolan.
My honor, Lieutenant.
Captain Danforth, shall we go to my cabin where we can talk?
Shall I go along, or will that be an intrusion?
If you'll remain here on deck, Mr. Nolan, we'll call you when we want you. Now, here are your orders, Lieutenant Mitchell. Nolan will be fed and berthed as befits his former rank of lieutenant in the Army. However, he must never hear of the United States again. He may read no books, receive no information, no conversation regarding the United States is to be held in his presence. Is that clear, Lieutenant?
Is he permitted to read newspapers?
Providing all news about the United States is taken out beforehand.
It will be difficult for my officers.
I understand that, but it can't be helped.
Yes?
Excuse me, sir, but this gentleman here would like to...
May I join you now, sirs? Do you mind?
Not at all. Mr. Nolan, Captain Danforth is just leaving.
Not because of my presence, I trust, Captain?
No. Not at all, Mr. Nolan.
You know, I think I'll enjoy life on the ocean. Good for the health, you know. Nothing to do but loll in the sun and enjoy the breezes.
They can become wearing after a while.
Oh, you don't think I'd be here that long, do you, Lieutenant? I'm not without friends. I venture to predict that I'm ashore before you.
That remains to be seen.
If I may ask, where and when are we sailing?
We sail within the hour. The route takes us round the Cape of Good Hope.
Indeed. Oh, that's quite a long trip, Lieutenant Mitchell.
A trip without an ending, Mr. Nolan. That was wonderful, Lieutenant Hathaway. You know, I'm beginning to enjoy these afternoon readings on the quarterdeck immensely.
Yes, just the thing to pass these long afternoons at sea, Captain.
May I join you, sir?
Why, certainly. Certainly, Mr. Nolan. We're reading again this afternoon.
Ooh. What's the book this time?
A new work by Walter Scott. It's called The Lay of the Last Minstrel. I picked it up from a British officer when we put into port on the African coast.
Well, I'd like to have a try at the reading this afternoon, providing that you have no objections.
Well, we haven't been through the book as yet. Still, the subject matter does seem safe. Very well, Mr. Nolan, you may read.
Thank you, Captain. Well, let's see now. Here's the place, marked in red. Breathes there a man with soul so dead, who never to himself hath said, this is my own, my native land.
Mr. Nolan, I...
Whose heart hath ne'er within him burned, as home his footsteps he hath turned from wandering on a foreign strand. If such there be, go mark him well. For him no minstrel raptures swell. High though his titles, proud his name, boundless his wealth as wish can claim. Despite these titles, powers, and pelf, the rest. Heaven forgive me. Heaven forgive me.
I believe he knows now what a homeland means, Captain Mitchell.
I believe he does. And he'll realize it all the more when we transfer him outbound before sailing for home. How do you like the party, Mr. Nolan?
Well, it's wonderful, Captain Mitchell. The music, those ladies, the Mediterranean night, the rocks of Gibraltar. Why, I believe it's the pleasantest evening I've spent in years.
I'm glad of that, Nolan. You know, you've changed since you boarded my first ship 4 years ago. Strange how fate has brought us together again.
I hope you're not displeased, Captain.
Not at all. I'm happy to have you with us.
Changing ships is the only excitement left me these days. I'm beginning to look forward to meeting officers like yourself. Men that I've met before. Friendly faces on far-off seas.
You're becoming rather well-known in the Navy, Nolan. I do believe you're welcome to board most of the ships.
Well, that makes me truly grateful, but why speak of things like that on such a night? I even feel like dancing. That very charming lady over there. She and I had danced together before. One time we knew each other rather well. I wonder if she'd remember if I asked her. Miss Rutledge?
Why, Mr. Nolan...
I'm charmed to see that you haven't forgotten me, Miss Rutledge. May I have the honor of dancing?
I am not Miss Rutledge any longer, Mr. Nolan.
No?
No, I'm Mrs. Grass now.
Oh, well. Good evening, Mrs. Grass. May I still have the honor of dancing?
Well, I was about to dance with Lieutenant Fellows.
But as he's not here...
Very well, Mr. Nolan.
Then how many years since we last danced, Miss Rutledge? Mrs. Grass? To look at you, it could have been last night.
Oh, let's not talk of the years, Mr. Nolan. They go so swiftly.
Do they?
Once one travels, I've been in Europe, all over Europe, it seems. And you?
Well, I've been all over the world, it seems. May I ask you, you are happy?
Yes, very happy.
I hoped you were.
You have thought of me?
Yes. I have so much time for thinking. And I preferred to think of what was pleasant, what was gay, what was charming.
Thank you. You still walk beautifully, Mr. Nolan.
It's my partner, not my waltzing. And so our waltz is ended. Shall we sit here for a moment? There was something I meant to ask you.
Yes, Mr. Nolan?
Now, you've been through Europe. You've seen a great deal.
Sometimes I think I've seen everything.
And what do you hear from home, Mrs. Graff?
From home, Mr. Nolan?
Yes.
I thought you were the man who never wanted to hear of home again.
Mrs. Graff! Mrs. Oh. He's decided to give us a fight then, Captain Mitchell.
He'll fight all right, Nelson. I think we can make a strike of colors. Here, take the glass.
Thank you.
Well, outguns us, doesn't he? Well, it'll be a good fight.
You mind if I help, Captain?
Glad to have you, Nolan. He's a tough one to crack.
Are you hurt? Are you hurt? Several wounded, sir. Our gun captain's dead.
Well, here, you. Get a party to carry these men to the surgeon. You and you, stand by. Ready now? Fire! Good shooting, men. Let's keep it up.
Well, Nolan, we came out of that engagement rather well, thanks to you and your marksmanship.
Well, they needed a man of that gun who knew his artillery, and I stepped in without thinking. I hope you're not displeased.
Displeased? Nolan, we're deeply grateful to you. I'm mentioning you in the dispatches to show you how I personally feel. Here's my sword. I'd like you to have it.
Your sword?
Yes. Go ahead, put it on, Nolan.
I haven't worn a sword since... If you'll excuse me, sir, I will go to my cabin. If you'll excuse me.
Here in the Brownstone Theater... We are presenting The Man Without a Country for Jackson Beck and Gertrude Warner, and our guest star, Neil Hamilton, as Philip Nolan. In this brief intermission, many years have passed. The case of Philip Nolan remains officially closed. He must serve out his sentence, never to hear the name of the United States again. But as he sails the seas, day after day, he finds himself learning to love his country more and more deeply. Efforts in his behalf have not been ended, but even the return of Aaron Burr, whom Nolan followed to his own disaster, does not seem to alter matters for the better. As the curtain rises on the second part of our play, we find Nolan with Captain Mitchell discussing the report of Burr's return to America.
Yes, according to reports, Aaron Burr has returned from his self-imposed exile in England.
Well, I hold him no grudge against him, Captain, in spite of the fact that my exile can never end. I go my way, collecting oddities for my scientific explorations, changing ships like the shifting winds.
Nolan, I might as well tell you. I was almost cashiered from the service for bringing up your case again in Washington.
But why must I go on like this? Why? Surely these long years have served as penance enough. I sinned against my country, true. But others have sinned and been forgiven.
Why won't they listen?
No one is willing to assume the responsibility for your pardon.
If I could only get back to plead for myself. Just once.
Maybe you can. I think I have an idea. Next week we meet our relief ship off the coast.
Did it work, Captain Mitchell?
Not the way we planned, Nolan.
Oh.
Sit down for a moment.
Not the way we planned. It's over, then. There's no hope.
I'm afraid not. You ought to go aboard Houston's ship. And I... Well, I am to lose my command.
They wouldn't do that to you.
They have. I'm afraid it's goodbye this time, Nolan.
Why should they do this to you?
I'm a Navy man, Nolan. Not my place to question. Well, don't be too downhearted. We can right each other, you know. After I'm ashore, maybe something can be worked out. But promise me you'll not give up.
In my own way, I will keep faith with you, Captain Mitchell. In my own way.
Hey, Topping, you might pass me the salt.
Ah, here you are.
Thanks. You know, Topping, we were trying to recall a name. It was a fellow who died recently. Tried to start a rebellion years ago.
Oh, that fellow. You mean Burr, Aaron Burr.
Oh, yes, that's right, Aaron Burr.
Say, let me tell you about him.
Gentlemen.
Yes, Nolan?
I hope you'll excuse me. I'm sorry. Sorry.
Well, what's wrong with old Plain Buttons Nolan?
You men didn't know. What's wrong with Nolan is Aaron Burr. He was a follower of Burr's.
What?
Yes, that's why Nolan has been out with the fleet all these years, never getting back to the States.
Well, I never knew that.
There aren't many who still remember why Nolan never goes home. Ah, he's a queer duck anyway. Do you know he never lets anyone set foot in his cabin?
Oh, nice. That's odd. Well, we'll get rid of him soon. The old man says that when we head for home, Nolan goes out again.
You're Captain Ward, aren't you?
Ward it is, Nolan. You've still got a good memory, I see.
I remember you from the Intrepid.
Ah, that was a fine ship and a fine cruise. Well, Nolan, I have some news for you.
Mm-hmm.
From a friend.
Who? Mitchell?
Yes. I saw him before I left, and he sends you his sincerest regards.
Well, how is he? What else did he say?
Oh, he's still in the Navy. As a matter of fact, he hopes to get a new command soon.
Do you think... That is, do you suppose... Will I ever sail with Mitchell again?
I don't know, Nolan. Time alone will tell.
Dear Captain Mitchell, unfortunately, I've been confined of late to my cabin. You see, I'm not as young as I used to be. Only the knowledge of your friendship sustains me during this period of meeting young and strange faces. Old Plain Buttons, they call me. Most of them either do not know or have forgotten why I am here. Only in their manner of speech and lack of reference to the land from whence we both came is it clear that those orders, which seem to have eternal use, are still in force. I have not heard from you in some time. Please write your most respectful friend, Philip Nolan.
Hey, Joe. Joe, you should have seen her. It's the first time I was ever on a slave ship. And it's going to be the last if I can help it.
What'll be the last time, Bolton?
Oh, begging your pardon, Mr. Nolan. I was just telling Joe about that slave ship we ran across yesterday.
The slaves should have been grateful for their deliverance.
Well, that they were, Mr. Nolan, but Mr. Gibbs had a hard time at first. He told them he'd put them ashore at Las Palmas, and that didn't please them so much. One big fella got up and made a speech. But I didn't understand the language.
I heard that speech and I understood it. He said, take us home. Take us to our own country. To the women and children of our hearts. Our fathers and mothers will die if they do not see us again. Take us home, please. Take us home. How old are you, Bosun?
21, Mr. Nolan.
21. Bosun, let what that poor slave said show what it is to be without a family, without a home, and without a country. If you're ever tempted to say a word or do a thing that will put a bar between you and your family, your home and your country, pray God in his mercy to take you that instant home to his heaven.
I will, Mr. Nolan. I will.
Oh, if somebody had only said that to me when I was your age.
Yes, come in. Well, you're looking well today, Mr. Nolan. Pray be seated.
Thank you, Captain Danforth. You wanted to see me.
Yes, I don't quite know how to begin.
My capacity for absorbing bad news has grown tremendously in the past 50-odd years, Captain. Come now, don't spare me. I'm to be transferred again.
No, it's more than that. If it were only that, it would...
It couldn't be. Mitchell? Something's happened to Mitchell.
Yes. Captain Mitchell is dead.
No.
According to my information, he died a few weeks ago. And almost to the moment of his death, he was still pleading your cause.
Mitchell. My friend. Mitchell.
Nolan.
How are you feeling now, Mr. Nolan?
Much more comfortable, thank you. Sorry to have bothered you. Stupid of an old man.
Don't be silly. You don't look any older than I do. You'll be out on deck in the spring sun before many days.
Ah, you don't believe that, do you, Doctor? No use in fooling me, you know.
No, there isn't.
Will you ask the captain to step into my cabin, please?
Immediately.
Come in.
You'll ask for me, Mr. Nolan?
Yes, Captain Danforth. Come in.
I've never been in your cabin before, Nolan.
I see you're interested in my surroundings. This is my country here. Here I come and pay tribute to the land which I will never see again.
Oh, nonsense, Nolan.
Is it true? Tell me. How do you like the map?
Huh?
I drew it myself. From memory, of course.
Yeah, it seems remarkably faithful to the tale.
Oh, good, good, Danforth. I did my best to piece together the conversations I overheard, and then I would mark my map as best I could. Danforth, I must ask a favor of you.
At your command, Nolan.
I know I'm dying. I shall never get home. Surely you'll tell me something now.
But I...
Hear me through. There is not a man on this ship. Not a man in all America. God bless us. More loyal than us. There cannot be another man who loves the old flag as I do, or prays for it as I do, or hopes for it as I do. Tell me. Tell me everything before I die.
Where shall I begin?
Bless you, Stella. And tell me the names on the flag. What are the states? How many have we?
Let me have the map. Here is Texas.
Splendid. I guessed at that.
And Oregon and California.
That's why I was not permitted to go ashore off the western coast. Continue, pray, continue.
And over here, we have Montana.
Just to think, 50 years of history covered in so little time. Enough, Danforth. I am content.
Is there anything else I can do for you, Nolan?
Just hand me my prayer book, please.
Oh, yes, of course.
It will open at the right place.
You are?
Now, let us read.
For ourselves and our country. Oh, gracious God.
Gracious God.
We thank thee
that... Nolan. Nolan.
This slip was in his Bible, Captain Danforth.
Bury me in the sea. It's been my home, and I love it. But will not someone set up a stone for my memory at Fort Adams or at Orleans, that my disgrace may not be more than I ought to bear? And say on it, in memory of Philip Nolan, lieutenant in the Army of the United States, he loved his country as no other man has loved her, but no man deserved less at her hands.
Well, we've had our drama. Now it's time for our game show. The game show is Candid Microphone. You've all heard probably of Candid Camera, but this is Candid Microphone. This, of course, predated Candid Camera, because it was on radio, naturally, not on TV. Same kind of program, though, and the guest on the show is Bela Lugosi. We don't have a date for this one. This should be good. Here's Candid Microphone.
And now let's follow Candid Mike out of the studio and into the world to eavesdrop on the secretly recorded conversations of all kinds of people as they react in real life to all kinds of situations. You'll be there with Candid Mike when Dracula himself tries to buy a lady's skull. When a professional wrestler spills the beans about losing a match. When a candy sales girl gets involved in a sticky problem. You'll eavesdrop on the human side of humanity, unposed, unrehearsed, and strictly uninhibited, because no one ever knows when he's talking into the Candid Microphone.
In the deep, dark cellar of a large fur storage company, a strange drama was being played some time ago. Let's set the scene exactly as it happened. We're hiding just beyond the locked door of a huge refrigerated vault, and man, it's cold inside there. A locksmith is kneeling at the bolted door of the vault, tinkering with the big lock. This is an emergency, or so he was told when Candid Mike telephoned to say a man was locked in the refrigerator, freezing. But the coolest person on the scene seems to be the locksmith, as he calmly says,
"Listen, we get conditions of that kind all the time.
Well, you think this is something unusual or something? The man is locked in. We get him with desks. We get him with safes.
Is this how fast you work on it?
That's right. I'm working on it. What can I do? You just stick it in there and it's done?
So where's the fella that's got the key?
Some smart guy locked the thing and takes it away with him all the time.
So how did he get in there?
He was in there when he locked it.
It's a nice place to be.
Listen, how much is it going to cost?
We'll run 3.5. That's the minimum charge.
The minimum charge?
That's right.
That's just one lock, isn't it?
Look, you... The guy is cold in there, huh?
I know so that you're the
gonna,
guy... You're it's
gonna
not
argue,
my fault.
So you're going to argue with me over a buck? Let him freeze if you feel that way about it.
Are you all right, Tom?
No, come on. It's cold in here. Get me out. I'm freezing.
All right, I'll get you out.
Come on.
Wait a second. The guy is here now. I'm getting an estimate from him.
Don't get no estimate.
Well, that guy...
Come on, it's cold.
Wait a second. I'll get you out now. Don't...
Shh.
Quiet. You're making too much noise.
Come on.
Quiet. Shh.
Hey, look. What do you want me to do?
To open it for $2.
No. It's 3.5. We just have one price. Here, the guy is freezing, you say. He's in there, right?
Well,
so what the devil is the difference if it's another dollar? You want to let him get pneumonia? Go ahead.
What a heartless guy.
Oh, heartless guy. If the guy is going to be in there and he gets pneumonia, it's going to cost him more than $3.5.
What do you have to do to open a lock?
I have to pick it open.
You hit it once with a hammer.
No hammers.
What's the matter? All right, the guy wants too much money, see?
Come on, I don't care. I'm freezing.
Well, no, I'll get you out, but this guy is too expensive. I'll get another fella. It only took him about a half hour to get here. I'll get another man.
Don't get another man. Come on, get me out.
All right, now take it easy. I told you I'd get you out.
If you want it done, I'm here to do it. If you don't want to pay me, then what's
the price? Well, it's $3.50 the bottom
that's
price.
That's the price. We don't.
In an emergency like
that? In an emergency, you should pay more.
And you leave a guy freezing in there.
Well, you're the one, not me. And the guy could have been out in the... If you want me to do this job, you pay me $3.5.
How are you, Tom?
He's cold.
And you'd let a guy freeze
out? Yeah,
that's
right. You're the one that's making him freeze, not me.
How am I making him freeze? I told
well,
you...
Well, you're arguing with me about
well,
price.
Well, open it for $2.
No,
get him out of there.
$3.5. I want to tell you something.
What?
Do you want it or don't you?
Now look, if you ever get yourself locked in a refrigerator, just be sure you have a cool $3.5 on hand. In sunny afternoon last week, a window shopping lady walked into a curio shop to browse, maybe to buy. She didn't know what she was really walking into. In the gloom and semi-darkness of the shop, she could see a pile of shrunken heads, oddly fashioned skulls, ghoulish knickknacks made of human bones. If Dracula himself were to step out of the shadows, it wouldn't surprise her a bit. Or would it? We'll find out because Bela Lugosi, the Dracula of the movies, was posing as the manager. The king of the zombies, with a polite, "Can I help you, madam?" is already talking to the lady.
You see, that's an original skull with original hair on it. Do you like it?
It's certainly unusual, but I don't
know. These are pieces of my collection. When I travel in Africa and in Asia, yeah. I always collect odd things, and I specialize in skulls and human bones, especially if I find one where I knew the person alive. Did you see something like that?
Oh, for goodness sake.
This was originally an arm bone of a young girl of 9 in Africa. And when she was sacrificed by their gods, then her lover saved that little bone and made a pipe out of it. Isn't that lovely? I'm collecting all these skulls and make different things out of it, because that's my hobby. But my supply ran out now.
It is a peculiarly sadistic hobby, if I may say so.
Isn't it? That's the fascination of it.
Is that really a shrunken head, or is it...
No, but it is a original size head of a certain tribe of savages. Mm. They call it the Pygmies. Mm. And that was saved for posterity.
Good Lord. And that's the original hair, too?
Yes. The original hair. You can touch them.
Oh, I can see them.
They're not as silky as yours.
Yeah, yeah.
You have a wonderful skull. You know, in a civilized country like America, I cannot get enough skulls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as far as the law is concerned, I need in writing the donation of the party who would like to leave me their skull.
Mm-hmm.
Would you do it?
No.
Perhaps I could manufacture something practical out of it. I could make different things out of that.
I imagine you could.
You see what I could do? I could make of your skull a tobacco jar like that.
What?
So any time I stuff my pipe, I would have to think of you.
Oh, dear.
Now, before you go, I have a surprise for you. Now, that little chat we just had now was recorded.
Oh, really?
And may I introduce myself? My name is Bela Lugosi.
Really?
The king of the zombies.
I don't believe it, because...
You
it's...
don't?
No.
Now I take a bite of your neck. Now, here!
Says people must squeeze every piece of candy in a box when they're looking for the particular one they want, but they'll do it every time. Well, how else can you tell which is a hard center and which a creamy one? That's exactly what Candid Mike is trying to find out in a busy candy shop as he asks the clerk a question that gets right to the center of that old problem.
Is this soft or hard?
Soft.
How do you know? Ooh, look at that.
It's soft. Now you know.
I'll say it.
You can usually tell by the shape.
Now, this was square. That's usually hard.
No, not with us.
This is pretty gushy.
Mm-hmm. But you could tell what's a nut and what isn't. You're supposed to know by the outside what's in what, but they're not.
Now, that's the trouble. See, that's right where my problem is.
Every time we have a box of candy, there's one member of my family that squeezes the candy to see which are hard.
And then she puts them back in the box.
Uh-huh.
What can I do?
Well, it'll be simpler to get 1 pound of one kind and 1 pound of another kind.
Well, we like to mix them up for the guests and everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way that in this assortment we can lick that?
Well, there isn't much that can be done if you buy a general assortment.
Well, we want an assortment, and then she just does what she does every time. She gets a candy like this, she squeezes it and eats it. What do you think?
Quite a problem.
Could you make up a box of assorted candies and squeeze all the soft center ones for me?
Squeeze all the soft center ones?
That's right.
A box of assorted ones?
A box of assorted candies.
And squeeze them.
And squeeze all the soft ones and put them back in the box, and then there'd be no problem about it.
I don't think you're very presentable.
Well, that's the way they look in the box anyhow. She might as well save herself the trouble of squeezing
them. How about just slicing them?
Could you slice?
If you took a thing like this and you sliced it, and it was gooey.
Yeah.
So if you put it right back.
Well, the only point is that I thought it'd be a good thing to show her how these things look when she puts them back in the box squeezed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can do them. You squeeze every soft one and put it right back in the box.
You sure you wouldn't like them sliced?
No, the slicing doesn't prove the point.
All right, it's just that it's an unusual request.
I know it is.
Mm-hmm.
And squeeze every single one of the soft ones. If they're runny,
yeah,
just let them run out.
Uh-huh.
What's the softest? candies that there are in there. Creams?
We have a raspberry cream.
Now, that would be...
We have a liquid butterscotch that is positively drooling.
Now, that would be good to squeeze.
Well, that would be a beautiful sight.
Can you do that? Would you have to check with any manager or anything like that?
Oh, no. I mean, as long as you want to pay for it, it doesn't make any difference to me whether you want them jumped up and down or anything else.
But I want everyone squeezed
everyone
and put...
Squeezed. And if they come down upstairs and think I've lost my mind, I'll tell them I'm quite sane. I'm just going to squeeze
them
chocolate.
And squeeze them so you can see the inside.
If you want them swollen, you can have them swollen.
Anyone who could use a box of fine candy, freshly squozen, please write to Candid Mike, but enclose a self-addressed bucket. Did something like this ever happen to you? You're trying to find a certain street, so you stop and ask someone. He starts to tell you how to get there. Pretty soon another man comes over and he tells you how to get there. Before they're through, you begin to wish that they'd both get lost. But this man, looking for a Barnett Avenue, had the good fortune to run into Candid Mike and his assistant. He's confused already, as he says.
Look, all I want is 48th Street and Barnett Avenue.
Yeah.
I don't want to go on Barnett.
You go down Northern Boulevard.
All right.
And then turn left and go into Barnett Avenue.
All right.
Then circle around until you come to 49th Street. Right?
All right.
And then when you circle around, you come back to 47th Street and back to Northern Boulevard, and that's Barnett Avenue.
Come again?
You want some information about it, or you just want it?
I just want to know what direction it's
in. You want to go wrong?
I know, Queens.
You want to get to Barnett Avenue? I'll tell you what to do. Just light up this Philip Morris cigarette, will you? Now, do the same thing with your own cigarette. Light that up, too.
All right.
Take a puff. Don't inhale it. And let it come slowly through your nose. That's it. That's the Philip Morris.
All right.
Now, do the same thing with your own cigarette. Take a puff. Don't inhale it. Slowly let it go through your mouth. Any difference?
One was milder than the other.
Which one was milder?
Philip Morris.
Was it milder than your own cigarette?
Yes.
The Philip Morris?
Yes.
Now, where do you want to go?
Barnett Avenue.
I don't know how to get there.
You bum.
You see, this is the microphone. You're on the radio now, the Candid Microphone.
No kidding.
That's right. Now tell me one other thing. Was that really true, what you said about the cigarette?
Of course it was.
Now you know why.
We dare them all.
Yes, now you know why the test you heard was a test no other cigarette would dare to suggest. For that completely candid test proves, not in 30 days or 30 hours or 30 minutes, but in just a few seconds, that Philip Morris is definitely less irritating, definitely milder, therefore more enjoyable than the cigarette you are now smoking. Remember, there's no cigarette hangover when you smoke Philip Morris. That's why, with all confidence, Philip Morris can say,
"We dare them all."
Yes, Philip Morris challenges any other cigarette to suggest this test, which gives you the opportunity to prove to yourself that Philip Morris is indeed America's finest cigarette. If you should happen to pass a lady with bees in her bonnet, don't be alarmed, men. More than likely, it's just a new hat style. But husbands simply refuse to understand that a really adorable creation doesn't have to make sense. As a matter of fact, neither does the man who sells the hat to madam. And just to prove that, Candid Mike arranged for his double-talking assistant to pose as a clerk in a ritzy millinery shop. As he waits on this next customer, he's going to put a lot of gibberish into the sales talk. Let's find out if a lady thrilled by the prospect of a new hat even bothers to listen. She's trying on that snappy new number now as he asks.
Do you like bows in the front of the hat?
Yeah, but I don't like them high. I like them this way.
Did you check it with hats before you wore them?
Well, I wanted a hat that would be comfortable and I wouldn't worry if it got rained on. That was my principal idea. Flowers I like, but kind of perishable in this weather.
You can't trigger with the rain. I mean, if it's raining and you come in the list room, say, with a straw of the foot and soft felt, it happens, I mean, before you know it. But if you track with flowers and a hard material, a face and the veil, then you can see the difference immediately.
Oh, really? I don't look good in this Breton type thing, too.
What do you call this, a Breton type?
Yeah,
I never called it a Breton.
What would you call it?
Well, that's a Trisbet.
But that isn't really a regulation Breton, though.
This isn't.
No.
But
no.
It's a regulation Trisbet. You can see that. The reason it's a regulation trigger is if it wasn't regulation, you would have a cistern with a bow on the flower come the first and without the string. That makes the world of difference. Now, do you see the little piece of elastic on the bottom of the hat? That makes it a junior trigger.
That's the reason I like to have the cistern. You don't have to have one of those.
You don't have to have a junior trigger,
no. I don't like those at all.
No, I'm not overly fond of them.
But they're good for comfort anyway.
What, the trigger? I think so.
I thought when you were over 35, you were always supposed to wear a brim hat anyway. Isn't that what the Lucretians claim you should do?
Well, that's the reason why we're coming out with the trigger hats. See, the flowers and the bows take the place of the fist knot face. And when you put the veil, come with the fuss, and without the turnips, well, that takes the place, and it makes your feet to stand up. Now, I don't know how you feel about that.
I call this a plain off-the-face hat with a bow. Now, what would you call it?
I would call it a frizzle with a bow and a flower with the lights.
Lovely. Is this going to be the trade name of this man that's inventing all this?
No, that won't be a trade name. It'll be sort of a lister name, kind of the chasm on a different hat to take. Don't you think it's wiser that way?
Yes, I think it would be.
Do you see this bow on the top?
Yeah.
Now, you have chasmids, you have lister with the flowers, and the trade with the designs. Now, what would you call this?
A bow, a lean bow.
Yes, but I call a leg with a bow kind of chad. You see the difference? Now, if I take this...
That's because you have all the technical terms and I don't.
Well, right, but don't you think if you knew the technical terms and you could walk up to Mrs. Jones on the street when you meet her and say, you have a lister with a hat and a trig, she'd be, well, how did you know? I only read about that myself. I
had you'd probably say, well, gee, you're getting high hat.
Now I'm going to show you something. You hold the end of it, and then you twist it to the lister and say, and come with a trag with a small pleat. You follow me? Sort of a little roll in the material. Now you push and then twist. Then come in the trag with the face and come in the forest and fade and another push. And then up on top of the head on the other side. Now, how does that look?
Looks like the things I used to wear when I was a girl.
It does.
Flowers here and twisted ribbon on the top. This is your formal dance.
Oh, well, I had a formal dance in those days. Did you ever, when you had the trag in your first evening dress and the hat come in the list and say, did you ever?
Oh, yes.
Miss Adams.
Yes.
If you'll excuse me, it was very nice meeting you. I'm going to have to run along.
All right, well, now I'll try to remember that.
Bye-bye.
Shall I put in the bus for you, please? Because I'm dashing along now.
Yes.
Well, he's very interesting. If I had more time, I'd have gone into that deeper.
Madam, please. Don't you think we're in deep enough already? If you've ever watched a professional wrestling match, you know there must be an easier way of making both ends meet than by having some big bruiser bend you in half. It takes skill and stamina to win a bout, but losing one is an art that's harder to develop than muscles. Now, no one is saying that any wrestler ever lost on purpose, heaven forbid. But if you ever feel like throwing your weight around and coming out on top, listen in on Candid Mike's conversation with a wrestler and learn how it might be arranged. We're right in the middle of a big deal now.
Maybe I might give you a little hammerlock, or maybe I might give you a half Nelson or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we gotta, make it look legitimate.
It'll look good. It'll look all right, and eventually you'll nail me, and that's all.
Well, you're liable to lose your temper in the middle of the fight.
Don't be foolish. I don't lose my temper. I swear I lose my temper. It's a business deal, isn't it? Well, we'll work about how long? About eight or ten minutes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you bang the floor?
We'll do everything. But it's got to look real, that's all.
You won't holler at
me. No, I don't holler. What do you mean, holler? What am I?
Will you grunt or something like that?
I'll grunt. I'll put on the act.
And you let me lick you?
Sure you can lick me. What do I care?
What about your reputation?
I should wear reputation.
So who's some of the guys you wrestle so I'll be able to tell them, you know?
I don't know. I wrestle so many of them boys. Spike Howard of Philadelphia, guy that the blood donor.
A blood donor?
He gave 1,000 transfusions, you know.
He did?
Yeah.
Did
he died.
Did you beat him?
I beat him, and then he beat me. What's the difference? I win, he wins. He's
what, do you do a toss for it, or what?
No, we just, if he's favored in that spot, so he wins. I'm favored in a certain spot, I win. And if we want a return bout, then I throw him there.
Hmm. Who else did you win?
In Frisco there, I wrestled in the municipal auditorium in Long Beach there.
Yeah, how'd you do?
In the bag. All in the bag, see. So,
when you say in the bag, you mean it's...
It's phony. In other words, it is not a shooting match. A shooting match is on the level, see.
Are there any of those?
There is, but they're no good. There's no action.
No
in
action.
In fact, there's no FBI agency.
No.
But I'm just getting the lowdown on this.
Yeah,
step.
Yeah.
In a phony match, which is 99% of them are...
No kidding.
Yeah, there's more action. People want action.
But in a real match...
In a real match, there's no action. You clamp a hold on a man and you hold him there. Until he quits.
And you think that 99% of them are fixed, though?
Yeah, but don't,
don't say anything about it?
About me quoting that stuff. I don't want to get myself messed up when the boys come coming.
Boy, oh boy, if I could lick you, then I'd really, you know, I'd look...
So you lick me, so what? I should worry.
I'd look like a big guy around.
Yeah.
What good things can I do to you? Like, I'd like to grab you around the head and that hammerlock and... drive you against that post.
All right, you can grab me around the neck and run me around.
Can I drive you against the post
with
your head?
Yeah, and I'll kind of ward myself off. So.
Uh-huh.
Naturally, I'm not going to stand there and have you hit
my
head against a post, see? I'm going to try and protect myself.
Yeah.
Naturally, you've got to hold your punches.
Well, supposing I slip a little bit, then you'll get mad at me.
No,
you'll tear me apart.
No, I wouldn't get mad at you. Don't let the stunts I pull scare you, see?
See, now you're a good-natured guy, but supposing I ram your head against a post there, you lose all your good nature.
You don't have to do them things. I could do the same thing to you, couldn't I?
That's what I'm afraid of, see?
Don't just come up and smack me, you know, hard, you know, and kick me and all that stuff.
Don't do it.
Because that's all hokum, what you've seen in the ring.
It is?
That's all.
But it sure looks
because
on the
level. If it was on the level, it'd kill one another.
I'm anxious to ram your head against that post. I always wanted to do that to somebody.
You must have the wrestling match. Is it essential to have it?
Yeah.
Or you want to make yourself a hero?
You wouldn't mind if I just kick you once, hard on the chest, like they do in the wrestling matches. You've seen, when I got you down, I have a finger hole on you or something like that, then I just kick you.
No, I'll tell you, if somebody's out to get hurt...
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you just told me...
When you work with a novice, no, when you work with a guy that don't understand you, you'll hurt him or he'll hurt you. I don't care. I don't want to win. It's no glory to me
That's
to
it.
Win. I'm
you don't care about
don't
me.
Win.
Let me win, because I've never won before. Most guys, little guys, come up there and they beat me.
I'll tell you, I'd sooner just do the stunts, to be candid with
no,
you.
No. To be candid with me.
Yeah.
Don't be candid with me. Just tell me
I'd
what you're trying
to do. The stunts. I'd pull the car loaded. I'd pull against a dozen men, and I'd bend these heavy spikes with the jaws. And if you went the country over, you couldn't duplicate.
No, you gotta have that wrestling match. How do you break those spikes?
With my mouth,
Are your teeth that strong?
Yeah, they're very strong.
Oh my God. You just take them out that way? So you mean you're actually bending those nails with your gum then, huh?
Yeah, sure. I can do it with the teeth, and I smash the teeth. I take them out and I bend them I gum the thing, you see? Gum them double. I pull the car with the gum. I pull anything on wheels up to 10 tons with the gum.
How much? How much do you get for the whole evening?
$50 too much?
It's not too much. Plus tax?
Huh? What tax? Forget about the tax.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Oh,
I'm giving you an exhibition that you that will surpass anything in the line of strength.
Until next week, the candid microphone goes back into hiding, the better to catch you in our act. And now, here is America's most famous eavesdropper, the man with the hidden mic, Alan Funt.
Thank you, Don. Folks, there's no use writing to us to volunteer to be on this program. There are no volunteers, but I'll tell you how to get on. You go your way, and we'll go your way, too. And sometime, somewhere, someplace, when you least expect it, we're going to make you a star of the candid microphone. Until then, I'll be looking for you.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.